Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. It is another EMID podcast special, which means that Patrick Bafuma is back once again for another interview. This time, another two-part interview, and this will be with Dr. Nico Cortez-Penfeld, and he does just go by Nico. He is from the University of Nebraska Medical Center, and he is really unique because he does orthopedic infectious diseases, which is kind of a bit of a niche, but he does an amazing job discussing two important subjects. One is about clindamycin and kind of when should you use it, when would IV antibiotics be appropriate, what are some of the common issues that arise with clindamycin, and what dosing regimen he recommends. So we're going to talk about that first, and then next week, make sure to come back because he is going to talk about that time, joint space infections. So let's go ahead and get right into this podcast.
On the EM side, I think unfortunately we feel a need to give them a dose of, you know, IV something. I'm not going to get started on one-time doses of vancomycin, which I we agree is probably silly. But what's your thought on IV clinda dosing and pharmacology?
Yeah. So I'm going to do like the classic ID thing and like bury the answer to the question you asked me and the answer to a question you didn't ask me.
Okay.
Because there are really two questions there. One is they're like, do I need to follow that primal urge to give something IV when a patient walks into the ED and I think they might have an infection? And then the second is like, if I do want to give a drug that's active against MRSA, which one should it be? And for question number one, I'm going to say, there are really only a couple of situations that it actually matters that someone gets an IV versus oral antibiotic up front. And the number one is sepsis, and particularly severe sepsis, where you've got end organ disease and you're worried about hypoperfusion and potentially gut hypoperfusion and you know, reduced absorption of your oral antibiotic on account of that. And more importantly, if someone's severely septic, you want to give a drug that you know is going to be active against, you know, all the gram-positive and gram-negative organisms. And these days, most parts of the U.S. at least, reliable for gram-negatives really means IV. It means at least ceftriaxone, and then depending on where you are, maybe a cefepime or a piptaz, or God forbid, a carbapenem. So, I mean, I think that is like probably far and away the case for the folks who really need an IV antibiotic dose in the emergency room. And the other couple of situations would be either bacterial meningitis, and specifically I'd be worried about meningococcal meningitis, and then necrotizing soft tissue infections like neck bash. And the reason those guys deserve IV antibiotics up front is because those are super fast moving infections, and the, you know, hour it takes for the oral drug to absorb and get into the bloodstream could actually make a difference in their outcome. But all of those people that I just described are folks who are, you guys know that you're going to put into the hospital. In fact, they're probably going to the ICU or to the operating room. So I think that most folks who, you know, you think they have an infection, but you're comfortable sending them home despite that, you know, someone who's got uncontrolled diabetes and they had a big thigh abscess, but you guys drained it and they're not systemically ill. You know, and those guys don't need a dose of vancomycin on their way out the door. You could start with oral antibiotics and it will be fine. Okay, so the question you actually asked me, which is why IV clindamycin, or would you use that? The reason I told you that, the reason like I kind of twitch whenever I see someone is on IV clinda is because like 9 times out of 10, they could be on something better. First of all, if you do want to use clindamycin, it's almost perfectly bioavailable. And that's why you see the oral and IV dosing is almost the same. So giving someone a dose of IV before sending them on oral clinda is just kind of silly. The same thing is true, by the way, of a bunch of drugs. So linezolid, the tetracyclines, doxy and meno, quinolones, metronidazole, to a lesser extent, Bactrim. All these drugs are much cheaper as pills, and we really ought to be giving them as pills, unless your patient's vomiting, or they've got a gut absorption issue, or there's some other really compelling reason to be using IV. Second issue that I have with clindamycin is the dosing. It's 3 times daily, and we know that as dosing frequency of a drug goes up, medication adherence goes down, and sometimes in some studies by 10 to 20%. And then, you know, even when people do take their meds on TID and TID plus dosing frequencies, they're more often to take them at the wrong times, you know, not perfectly every 8 or 6 hours. So why am I going to prescribe clindamycin and know my patient's going to struggle to take it when I could be giving them Bactrim or doxycycline or linezolid, all of which are 2 times daily and also treat MRSA? And then my final issue with clinda is that it's just not a good drug for MRSA. I mean, look at your own local antibiogram, but for most of the US, resistance among MRSA is actually highest with clindamycin versus the other agents. Where I practice, almost half of our MRSAs are resistant to clinda versus 95% plus susceptible for Bactrim or tetracyclines. So it's very rarely the best choice.
What is the appropriate dose? Because I sort of see this all over the map. I see some people try to give like 600 IV as a quote unquote loading dose, and then, you know, give them like 300 three times a day. I've seen dosing anywhere from 150 to 600 milligrams three times or four times a day. What's going on here? What the hell are people doing?
Sure. So if you get on UpToDate, you look at the dosing schedule, it'll say like, you know, 300 to 450, 6 to 8 for most infections. What I will tell you is I don't prescribe anything four times a day. And that's because of the adherence issue. I think we're really just kidding ourselves when we prescribe medications that frequently. I would much rather push the dose a little and give it TID and know that my patient's actually going to be able to take a breakfast, lunch, or dinner medication. I would say, and this is getting a little bit into the weeds and from like a PK/PD perspective, and I'll say I'm not a pharmacist. If you have an ID PharmD, they probably give you a more intelligent answer. But what I would say is clindamycin has a half-life of about 3 hours. So the difference between Q6 and Q8 hour dosing is about a little less than one half-life. So, you know, most indications are going to be 300 to 400 milligrams every 6 hours. And that's why I give 600 milligrams every 8 hours or 600 TID. That happens to be the recommended dose for pneumonia and bone and joint infections. It is, you know, pharmacokinetically similar to the 300 Q6 hour dose that's recommended for skin and soft tissue infections. So I really think 600 TID will cover the majority of indications. There are a few indications for which lower doses are recommended, things like BV, things like group A strep pharyngitis, and then toxic shock and endometriitis, they're recommended to give 900 Q8 hours IV. I don't know if that minutia is necessarily what I wouldn't want your audience to remember of all the things we talk about. If you're going to remember one thing about the clinda dose, I would say 600 TID, if you're going to use clinda, is a good dose for most indications.
Going back to what you said about the timing, you said you wanted them to space it out a bit, and then you mentioned that there's a 10 to 20% decrease in compliance with more difficult dosing. So with this timing thing, are you telling people breakfast, lunch, dinner? Because that may just be like 4 hours in between for some people. Are you telling them like when you wake up in the morning, when you go to bed at night, and then somewhere in between? Like what's your strategy for discussing timing?
What I usually tell people is to take their first dose as soon as they get up in the morning, to take their last dose right before they go to bed, and then, you know, to take the middle dose in between those. And breakfast, lunch, and dinner is easy to remember. It's not perfect, but if I have someone who like is not the most health literate, or someone who like already has a bunch of stuff on their plate, I think that's very easy to remember. If you have someone who's like, you know, has the bandwidth to be a little more diligent and can put them in their phone, then we can try and space it out more evenly. I think my real take-home point is that when I prescribe a TID drug, I have at least a reasonable confidence that my patient's actually going to take each one of those doses. Whereas if I'm prescribing a QID drug, like I know in the back of my mind, on most days, I'm going to be lucky if they get three of their four doses. I would rather give something that will work if it's taken the way the patient takes it, and actually believe the patient is going to take it that way. This is not what we're talking about, but I will say the other drug for which I like have a strong feeling about this is Keflex, because I know that like everyone loves Keflex, and it's a fine drug, wonderful drug, one of the few beta lactams. It's actually really well absorbed orally. But I think the Q6 hour dosing is silly. I when I prescribe Keflex, I always give a gram three times a day rather than 250 Q6.
I'm going to switch back here to a special case where, in theory, I'm not sure what else my options are besides clinda. And that would be pregnancy cellulitis that either failed Keflex or they're allergic to penicillin or Keflex. Bactrim's not really on the table. Doxy, people get a little concerned about. So what are you using for that special population?
Sure. So the first thing I'll say is it is worth asking the patient more about their penicillin allergy.
Yeah.
If it's a distant allergy, if it's not an anaphylactoid allergy, you probably are okay given a cephalosporin instead. But that said, yeah, this is a great reason to use clindamycin. You know, their linazolid's pregnancy category C, there's not as much experience with it. You mentioned the reasons we shy away from doxy or Bactrim. Although technically, if you know the neural tube is closed, like Bactrim should be less of an issue. But in real life, that's not a drug we're going to reach for. I mean, that I think is a pretty good use case for actually using Clenda.
Gotcha. All right. Anything else that you would want to add for Clenda for this portion of the discussion?
Not a ton. I know you did mention that you were curious about, like, hey, what's the inducible resistance to Clenda in staph? And I'm sure we all learned about that in the D test in med school or pharmacy school or the equivalent of, you know, wherever your audience folks trained. I will say in 2019, the microbiology lab should be all on top of that. They should be automatically testing for inducible Clenda resistance. They should be flagging inducible resistance as resistant when they report out the isolate. And so long story short, you should be able to trust the little S or the little R or the little R next to Clenda if your micro lab has its act together.
You are making a lot of assumptions.
What I found is that when they report that out, there's often a little line that says tested negative for inducible Clenda resistance.
Okay.
And that's what that means. But they should be flagging, if they should be testing for it, and they should be flagging inducible resistance as resistant so that you guys know not to use it.
That wraps up this short podcast. Remember to check back again next week for another podcast with Patrick and Nico. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.